Hello, hello. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobspodcast.com. How is everyone doing? I hope everyone is staying cool this summer. If it is hot as heck where you are, getting some beach action, maybe some poolside action, cooling off, I do hope taking a break, taking a load off, listening to our podcast. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Android, or one of those other amazing platforms, we would love it if you could like, subscribe, share, tell your friends, show us some love, give us some feedback, and just tell us what you think of the podcast. We would love to hear. Last week, I had the wonderful pleasure of interviewing Dr. Gigi Johnson. She is the director of the UCLA Center for Music Innovation at the Herb Albert School of Music. And she's had one of those really amazing, eclectic, non-linear career trajectories. She has a PhD in educational change and media studies, an MBA, a film degree. And she basically talks about how all these different degrees and all her different business experiences all lend and all contribute to her career in music, about music innovation. So just a really fascinating discussion and pure proof that you do not need to or probably will not have a linear career in music. That's what's so exciting about it, especially today with this really different music landscape that just keeps constantly evolving. My next guest is James Bechera. He is the global head of Airbnb Concerts, Airbnb Music, which is a relatively new division out of Airbnb, and it has just been blowing up. It's an exciting new platform that is creating intimate experiences for artists and fans and local artists and new fans. So just a really cool new innovative platform. And James is going to tell us all about it. And he's also going to walk us through his career trajectory. But before we do that, let's hear one of James's favorite tracks. Here's Mr. Wendell by the band Arrested Development. Here it is.
In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you. Be strong, serve God only. Know that if you do, beautiful heaven awaits. Asked to pull my rope for the first time. I saw a man with no clothes, no money, no plate. Mr. Wendell, that's his name. No one ever knew his name, cause he's a no one. Never thought twice about spending on an old bum until I had the chance to really get to know one. Now that I know him, to give him money isn't charity. He gives me some knowledge, I buy him some shoes. And to think blacks spend all their money on big colleges, still most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Hey, James, thank you for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm really happy to have you.
Hey, Ariel. Great to meet you and happy to be here.
Yeah. So let's go back, maybe not too far back because you have a baby face, but tell me about your childhood. Tell me about kind of like first musical influences or what do you first remember hearing? What kind of music were your parents playing, that kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah. It's fun to think about this. As I was getting ready for the interview, I was trying to just think about that side of things, and I haven't thought about it in a while. But yeah, my journey to being in the music industry right now is pretty circuitous. But I think it started with a piano in our house growing up that no one played, and it just sat there as this upright piano, this upright Steinway that was unbeknownst to me at the time. It was beautiful and really well made piano, but no one played it. And as we moved houses growing up a couple of times, we just kept moving this huge clunky piano around and no one ever played it. And I would hear stories of my grandmother used to play the piano, but never really made a whole lot of sense. And then when I was about 16, I just started to sit at the piano and start to fiddle around with it.
Mm-hmm. And was music going on in the household? Like, were your parents playing music in terms of like, you know, radio or records or things like that?
So, yeah, not really. I think I'm one of the oddballs in the music industry. At least it's not the typical story where, no, I was not going through my dad's record collection or anything. I think he's a very spiritual, philosophical guy. So he was, he was much more of a reader. He loved The Who. And he had this great story where he would tell the story of going to see The Who for the first time. And he was also a really big Bob Dylan fan. and he took me to go see Bob Dylan when I was 10 years old. It was my first concert, which is a really, really crazy, crazy first concert. And he had this great story where he brought Billy Joel to his college.
Oh, wow.
When he's in college. So he had these stories, but it wasn't, but yeah, I wasn't just kind of swimming around in his record collections growing up. And it was a little bit more of just a pull towards this piano, in the corner of our house and fiddling around with it. And then starting to kind of just learn by ear a few songs. First song I ever learned by ear was Coldplay's The Scientist, which probably came out around that time when I was 16, and really loved that. I think that it was such a simple song to learn that I couldn't believe such a simple song to learn could be such a massive, you know, popular hit. Mm-hmm. But I think those two things kind of clicked in my head of, wow, maybe this isn't so, maybe this is kind of now demystified and I can learn to play other songs. But yeah, it wasn't from my parents really. Unfortunately, I wish they had influenced it more earlier on, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. I mean, I've heard cases where, you know, people reject what their parents love, right? So it's like I've heard cases, yeah, where parents were super into music, or they were in the industry, or they were, you know, hardcore musicians, and their kids were like, I'm going to do accounting. So
yeah.
You just never know. So when did you first sort of take it out into the outside world? Was it in high school? Did you start a band or what happened?
Yeah. In college, I started to create electronic music in college. And that was the nice thing about playing the piano is it translates really well to a MIDI controller that, you know, you can plug into a computer and have, mm-hmm, 2000 instruments at your fingertips. And so then I started to create electronic music. And by my senior year, I was trying to decide would I even entertain the thought of pursuing music full time. And I submitted I created an album, sent it out to about 30, 35 record companies and heard some really, really encouraging things along the way. But someone in my family, I won't call the person out in case they listen to this interview, but it wasn't very encouraging and just gave me a little bit of the reality of the phrase that there's no money in music, and that's as a cliche for a reason. And I think that cliche will come back here in the story in a few minutes. But I think it was a bit of just a reality check of pursuing music. You definitely don't do it for the money. I was not a savant, so I knew it was going to be years of grinding. And an equal passion of mine was the nonprofit world. And so I decided to go work in the nonprofit side of things and poverty alleviation in South Africa as my career focus, and just left music kind of on the side. And that cliche would actually, 10 years later, kind of come back into the story of what we're building with Airbnb Concerts. And in that circuitous, really, really cool way, it's now one of the most, that single cliche is probably the thing that we're most impassioned to combat for artists around the world.
I want to back up a little bit. Can you talk about what DAW did you use? Did you use Pro Tools or Logic or Ableton?
Yeah, I used Logic.
Or? Okay.
Yeah, I used Logic, yeah.
And did you teach yourself?
I did. So there are things that the music snob in me, you know, wants to suppress, but the realist in me also wants to profess to everyone out there. One, Coldplay is an awesome band, and they are amazing, amazing artists. And I just have so many friends, and much of the time I am one of the snobs that almost, you know, kind of, you get points for looking down on something with mass appeal, but man, really, really, really good. Russia Blood to the Head is one of the best albums, I think, in the last, you know, 20 years. But the other thing is, GarageBand is so powerful for someone to learn to create music on, I mean, now iPhone. But back then, 10 years ago, it was just this free application on my computer, on my MacBook. And I was able to create my first few songs on GarageBand, which then lends itself to learn Logic pretty well afterwards. But I mean, even today, I'm just blown away. I can be sitting in my bed on an iPad and start to create at least the kind of the struts of what can become a song through GarageBand. And it's like the least cool thing to say, but it is for really serious musicians. But I think the world is filled with a lot far more creatives that that feel like there's such a high barrier to entry and feel alienated by how complex DAWs of today are, like Logic or Ableton's a little simpler, but it's really alienating. And I think getting started with GarageBand is one of the best ways you can get started.
Mm-hmm. But I want to give you props for that, though. And I think it is really significant that you taught yourself Logic, because I use Logic and I know how complicated it can be. I mean, it is in some ways, you know, thankfully it's the big brother to GarageBand, so there is a lot of similar layouts, et cetera, but it's still a very complicated, complex animal. So I think the fact that you took it upon yourself to go in this electronic direction, and I'm sure you know, like, it's such a rabbit hole as well, right? It's like,
right.
How much do you really want to know? How much do you really want to learn and become really good at? It could take decades. So I think that that speaks to kind of, you know, what I'm getting is like sort of an entrepreneurial, kind of a little bit of a risk-taking spirit of like, I'm going to try this. Because a lot of people do use GarageBand and that's it, right? They use GarageBand and then they stop there and they might go and find a producer or go back to acoustic or whatever. But I don't think a lot of people make that leap. So I just wanted to give you a little shout out.
I think it's similar to, so I also started my after the nonprofit side of things, went into tech and here at Airbnb, I'm obviously right in the epicenter of Silicon Valley. And I think it's similar to my curiosity around engineering. And I think it is, when you start to have a project that's in you that you want to bring out, then I think it really ignites the curiosity of what tools out there can help bring this project to life. And I think learning programming is a similar thing where it seems very complex, but when you have a simple project that's in your head or in your heart that you want to bring out, that really helps put the pieces in place, and it starts to demystify how complex it is. So I appreciate the compliment, but also would say it's Logic is very like learning how to code, very doable, mm-hmm. and really rewarding when you start to pull out those threads and start down that kind of rabbit hole and you start to see these things come together, whether it's, you know, if I'm talking to someone that wants to enter the startup world, talking about building a, you know, simple app or a simple website, or with, if you have a song and you're a great musician and you play the piano, wow, you've done 95% of the work to be able to compose and produce, you know, right on your computer. But yes, Logic seems to get more and more complex. With Logic Pro now, it does sometimes feel like when introducing to people, it's like a slide, it's like a water slide that goes 0 to 100 really quickly with the complexity of it, because it is so powerful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I recommend GarageBand as a great first step to learn.
Mm-hmm. So now walk me through a little bit. You were, you know, you talked about the nonprofit. Did you, in terms of your trajectory and going to college, you didn't think about like going to a music school or going more deeper into sort of formal learning with electronic music? You were drawn to nonprofit. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I think that kind of stems from wishing that my parents had taught me a little more about, or at least introduced me more to the arts more directly when I was younger, because I picked up the piano when I was 16, really started self, teach my chords and scales when I was 17, 18. And so it was a little too late to think about it as at least to consider it, as what I would focus in college. And I went to Wake Forest in North Carolina and studied development economics. Economic development, you know, economics applied to developing regions around the world, and went and worked in the nonprofit realm in South Africa, and poverty alleviation focused organization in South Africa called Kuyasa. Shout out to Kuyasa out there. I'm sure they're all going to check this podcast out. and it was, while I was there, I kind of combined my passion, this feels so now just articulating so a field of music, but combined my passion of a nonprofit space with programming and started to build out what became one of the earliest crowdfunding platforms out there called Develo, and it was focused on nonprofit organizations. And that kind of was almost kind of like a a monkey in a branch to another branch, went from a nonprofit space to the startup space, and I became fascinated with the application of software and technology to my other passion of the nonprofit side of things, and music was just kind of on the side. We kept making music. The first 6 months of living in Cape Town, all 10,000 miles away from family and friends, I was making a lot of music on the side. So I did that, and then that took me into, fast forward a few years and taking it more seriously, that took me into the startup realm and brought me out here to San Francisco and Silicon Valley.
Did you immerse yourself at all in the music scene in Cape Town?
I did. It's a really small scene, and I would move from Cape Town to Texas and Austin, and so it was always city that I could immerse myself in the music scene. Cape Town though was pretty small, but I will mention this a little anecdote that there's a group there called Max Normal, and it was a group that friends and I would follow around to these small, they just played bar gigs, so 30 people, 50 people, 100 people. The creators of Max Normal then would go on to create D'Antvoort, kind of a second version of this rap creation. And D'Antvoort is now a global phenomenon with Ninja, and it was just so crazy to see them go from Max Normal, which was they wore suits, and it was very straightforward kind of white hip hop, South African hip hop, to now D'Antvoort, which is there's nothing like D'Antvoort in the world
for anyone that knows it.
And so it was really cool to see them blow up and from a very early stage out of Cape Town. But yeah, outside of that, I was pretty focused on the work that I was doing in Cape Town for the 2 years that I lived there.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to jump ahead too much, but it's funny because you're talking about the nonprofit and then coming up with this crowdfunding app, and I'm thinking about Patreon, right? Like for a lot of people, like the arts are nonprofit. Like there really is, it's very difficult to make a living as an artist, as a musician. So I am definitely seeing kind of parallels, and I wondered if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think crowdfunding is this at its core, it's just what can you do economically as together that you can't do individually, mm-hmm. and I think it is it ties into I really hope we deliver on this on the lead that we're bearing with Airbnb concerts, but because I keep seeing some parallels, but there's when you do have groups coming together, you can create something economically that an individual can't. And I think it's also, that's the economic side of things, but experientially it is far better. I mean, no one wants to go to a concert alone. You want to go with your best friends. Mm-hmm. No one wants to be the only person in the audience. You want to go with a community and feel like you're part of a community. I think it's far more powerful that way. As great as it is to listen to music on headphones in a solitary fashion, it's nowhere near as enlivening and I think as powerful as when you get to see the musicians in front of you creating the art. And I think what is really interesting about music is that it is, even from its beginnings of around a campfire, it is so communal, it is so powerful when it goes beyond just the creator of the music and it becomes this communal, connective type of experience. And I think kind of fast forwarding from my first crowdfunding application that I built, when I kind of came back to the U.S. and thought, okay, that was a nice nonprofit kind of nights and weekends project. And I thought about what could this look like in a more serious professional endeavor venture. I started to think about just group experiences, and you have things like Patreon, you have things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and I ended up building a company called Tilt, which was focused around smaller groups making things happen, kind of like a Twitter-esque version of crowdfunding, to where instead of $50,000 for a documentary, it'd be $1,500 for a backyard barbecue or on college campuses is where we grew the fastest for the tailgate that could be that much better if you could have a live band. And these experiences that can become much better, one, if you can have the economic power of the group, but also even better if you could have instead of 15 people, 45 people pitching in and being a part of the experience. And so I think, it ended up going towards live music. Tilt ended up we ended up being pulled in towards 1,500 person concerts that fans would fund for the Foo Fighters to come play in a 1,500 person venue. You know, something that they do that they don't do very often. Or the Chainsmokers ended up using it for a 6-city tour, where they would just let fans find, you know, pull them to the first 6 cities that would sell, you know, 1,000 tickets. They'd be a part of this tour. Or, you know, the folks like G-Eazy or Jack White and the fans coming together to make this happen. It was really, really cool to see it be naturally drawn towards these communities of fans wanting to make this experience happen themselves. A little bit different than Patreon, where it's the artist saying, you know, broadcasting and saying, you know, pitch into the creation. It's more like, you know, the fans could come together, band together and create the experience themselves. It's really, really fascinating to see that happen over the 5 years that I built out Tilt.
Yeah, I'm super fascinated. You reminded me of a video, you know, I took like a songwriting digital marketing class, and they showed us this video of, you know, a festival, right? And there's like one dude dancing, and it's just him. He's the only one dancing.
Right.
And then like 10 minutes later, the second person joins them. And, you know, my instructor's like, that's, you want the second guy, because as you watch the video, right, maybe you've seen it, you start to see more and more people start dancing, right? But it took like the second guy to jump up. And it's kind of the same thing, right? It's like that 1,000 true fans thing. Yeah.
I know that video. I love that video. And it's totally right. And it's kind of like when you get to local artists, the unknown tier of local artists, the tier that we're focused on most for Airbnb concerts, they are they're that one guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to create their art. They're trying to pursue their passion, and it's not enough. They need people to discover their art to make it at least viable certainly for a full-time career. And it takes a while. You have to be comfortable being that first person out there dancing alone and potentially looking like a fool. No, not even potentially, you looking like a fool.
Right.
Maybe not
right
to everybody, but there will be people as a local artist. I know for me in creating my music, even not as a full-time endeavor, it was always a bit unnerving to put your art out there and not knowing what people would say. And it was absolutely critical for that second person to come dance with the fool. And then by the end of the video, there's 35, 45 people that are having the best time of anyone at that concert. And it required, you know, that first person, and it required that second person to recognize, hey, there's something really cool here. I'm going to go dance with that person. And I think that, you know, it's right now in the music industry, if you pursue it full time, a lot of it is kind of as an artist, it's kind of a lottery system. You mm-hmm. have out of, I've seen so many different types of ranges thrown out there, but you know, you have anywhere from 8 to 10 million professional musicians in the world, and about 50,000 of these musicians or bands can go on tour. So that's a huge gap. And it's kind of like a lottery system of whether you can really pursue it full time and not just quote unquote professionally, meaning you're making money but not full time, versus being able to do it full time. And I think some work to relate to that video. I think we're trying to create more people that can go out and discover those local musicians and be that second, you know, that second person that jumps up there and dances with them. And at our concerts, because they're really intimate, I'd be remiss not to explicitly say that, you know, that one of my favorite aspects about Airbnb concerts, you know, it's in its nascent stage. We only launched a few months ago, but it is these intimate, smaller concerts. You actually get the audience getting up out of their seat and dancing with the artists, not, you know, 30 feet away, you know, 10 feet below because it's a big stage, but actually like getting up there and dancing with the artist. It really one of the coolest ways to encourage local arts that I've seen in a long time.
That's great. Well, let's just back up a little bit. So you create Tilt, and then how long were you working on that? Like how long was that trajectory?
Yeah. So I created Tilt from my bedroom to acquisition to Airbnb was about 5.5 years,
mm-hmm.
five, 6 years. And yeah, so I spent full time on that and built that just a few blocks away from here from Airbnb. And it took me from Texas out to and Austin out to first Palo Alto for an incubation program called Y Combinator, and then up to San Francisco, where we kind of built it out full time and for the majority of the life of the company.
And then what was the transition to Airbnb?
So Airbnb saw what we were building, and about 30% of our activity was around group travel. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was around group recreation, group entertainment, like the music stuff that we were talking about. A significant portion was around groups traveling together, six people pitching in for an Airbnb, or 12 people pitching in for a, you know, a bachelorette party. And so Airbnb would continually get these requests to be able to split payments of an Airbnb, and a significant amount of Airbnb's revenue comes from group travel as well. Mm-hmm. And so we knew the team. We shared investors, and they had looked at acquiring us a couple times when we're two people, when we're 25 people, and then in 2016 looked pretty hard at acquiring us to help with splitting payments of Airbnbs and plugging in our technology to help make that happen for the 191 countries that Airbnb operates in. And so that's what we came on board to do. And that was the reason for the acquisition. And I think part of the thread was, all right, we'll integrate Tilt into the technology to split payments, the Airbnb. And then and there is this growing view that and strong hypothesis that Airbnb can be this platform for dozens, if not 100 different businesses that can be built around travel, community experiences, and come on board, and then we'll see what other kinds of businesses we could incubate and launch. And so fast forward about 9-10 months, experiences had launched about the same time that we were acquired, which is amazing things to do in the city that you're traveling in. And you're staying in Airbnb in Paris, and now if you're traveling to Paris, you'll get a set of emails and a set of kind of notifications for these amazing experiences that you can buy at Airbnb now. And experiences launched in November 2016, and it's by far the fastest growing product that Airbnb's ever launched, faster than homes. And it has been a really, really cool thing to see the business expand from accommodations and homes to things that you can do outside the home. Mm-hmm. And within homes or within experiences, music was this fast growing category of experiences. And so I was kind of, as we integrated and launched split payments for homes, there was these conversations happening around, maybe there's a business that can be incubated and launched here around Airbnb's kind of version to live music, and what could that look like?
If I'm not mistaken, did they first start with Sofar Sounds? Is that right?
Yeah, we have partnered with Sofar in the past, and I was actually just on the phone with Sofar today. We've remained really close, and I think I think we will partner in the future. Mm-hmm. Well, we partnered in the past and in 2017, and I hope we can partner again in 2018. But yeah, so we kind of, how it worked was, music was growing and these intimate concerts were growing, kind of popping up in organically around the world in a few cities. And within these, we saw kind of the signal that travelers really loved these types of concerts of usually less than 50 people and really unconventional spaces, 15 and 25 bucks, and seeing these local musicians whenever you're traveling to Paris or New York or LA. And so then we looked at partnering with a brand that's really known for having a lot of these types of concerts and so far, as well as probably three or four other brands that there's about 30 companies out there that do these types of intimate concerts. It was one of the first ways that we kind of tested and incubated the concept out of focusing on it as what we kind of internally call kind of a super category that might be in music that could be really, really big for our traveler community. And so, yeah, we worked with Sofar in 2017, and I hope to work with them again this year as well.
So just to go back to what you were saying, because I want you to tap into it again about how, you know, the well-meaning relative told you, like, there's no money in music. How did that come back up for you, and how were you able to tell that relative, like, look at me now?
Yeah. Well, we can cuss on this
yes.
on the podcast, right?
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I won't. To this relative. I would never be able to cuss. I'd get my mouth washed out with soap. But where that comes back to play is I think there's, it's kind of similar to, and just kind of thinking about this intimate format of live music. It's a lot like, for those that have never seen never been to an Airbnb concert, or been to a concert, you know, in a living room or a wine cellar, or our concerts take place in some really amazing places, from former palaces in Florence to 100 people under the roof of a yurt, to a steamship, to a famous recording studio and the Village Studios down in LA, and kind of anything and everything between, all these quirky spaces. If you've never been to a concert like that, at least for a lot of people, I think they think, well, you know, how good will the music be? Is how comfortable will it be? I'm used to going to, you know, 1,000 person or 10,000 person venues to see, you know, mega acts. How good will it be for just an unknown local artist that I've never heard of? And it's a little bit like Airbnb, where you hear the concept of staying on someone's couch or in someone's home 10, 11, 12 times, and you just think, I don't know, it just seems a lot easier to just go to a hotel. But then you do it. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, holy shit, this is really different. This is a very different way to travel. Well, similarly, you go to one of these types of concerts, and you just go to airbnb.com/concerts to see if you're in one of our first 25 cities. And you go to one of these concerts, and you're like, holy shit, this is a really different way of experiencing live music. It's participatory, it's conversational. You're getting to know the artist behind their songs or behind their story as their own entrepreneurial story. And I think what it lends itself to is it's a new format for local artists, unknown artists, and local music to connect with either travelers that are going to the city and want to discover the local music, or it is just local Airbnb community members that go to a concert. It's not only an amazing way for you to connect with these folks as artists, economically, it's also really powerful for these artists. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, similar to, you know, you could have an apartment, you're struggling to make rent, and Airbnb can be a really great way to help. I mean, that's a pretty profound part of the Airbnb story over the last 10 years of being able to, you know, economically benefit from that extra space. And for an artist, what is really unique here, and took me a little bit of it took our team a little bit a time before we really realized this really special aspect of this, and it requires almost a little bit of a buildup of how special this is. It's really subtle but powerful. If you are a local artist and you're playing an Airbnb concert, and let's say there's visitors from 12, 15, 20 different cities around the world seeing you play. What is really subtle but powerful about this model is every single weekend, LA or San Francisco, we have 35,000 new travelers every weekend. And so you, as a local artist and playing an Airbnb concert, you can play in front of a new audience every single week. Mm-hmm. And that is so different than friends that I'm sure you have many friends that are artists. You know, they really actually feel like, okay, I can play maybe once every 2 weeks or every 2 months. I could have maybe the standard gig at a bar where I'm background music, but my own shows where I'm trying to get my fans and friends to come out, I could play maybe once every 2 months or every 3 months in the same city before you saturate your audience. And that's, you know, just a known. That's a known challenge for all the local musicians out there. But what's so unique about this is you could actually play, you know, once a week to a brand new audience. That's every weekend, it's a brand new 35,000 people that are coming into the city. And that, I think, as this grows, we're still early on, but as this grows, I think it become one of the most powerful economic aspects of this for local artists. And I think it hits that cliche right in the head. Mm-hmm. There's no money in music. Well, I mean, if you can make $150 for, you know, ultimately we want to get to where there are dozens and of concert Airbnb concerts every single week in each city, maybe even more if it grows beyond that, to where you could play two or three or four times a week, and you know that adds up. That's really significant. And the better you are as an artist, our artists make anywhere from $150 to $800. So, you know, there's real economic value for local artists there. And that's, I think, a tier you know, there's a bit of a long-winded answer, but it's something that we think immensely about. And I think it's something that what this can become 3, 4, 5 years from now is a really strong business model built specifically around that local unknown tier of artists that not many large brands within music even think about, much less focus on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny, I'm thinking about, you know, your experience with Max Normal, right? And seeing them in this like little dinky dive bar with like 30 people. And there is, taking from the fan's perspective, there's a sense of, and I think this is what you were saying earlier too about your app, like the fan experience, there's a sense of like proprietary ownership and pride, right? Like I discovered them. I was the first. Like mm-hmm. I remember being in a dive bar back east and paying $10 to see Jimmy Eat World. And I was like, who the fuck are these guys? Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, they just like destroyed the stage. And now of course I'm like, I remember when that, you know, and there's that sense of like ownership and pride. And I think that is also kind of what you're getting at. And the trajectory that I kind of see from your days seeing this band in Cape Town doing this crowdfunding app and then on to Airbnb, I see that connection of like, there's a really special bond between artist and fan. And how do we make it more intimate? How do we give more of a sense of pride and ownership and support from the fan to the artist, et cetera, et cetera? Is there any like, this just popped in my head, is there any plans like Airbnb label, like a record label or anything like that?
I don't know. I think we're super focused on just the foundation here, but
just providing the platform.
Right. Providing the platform. And I'm a big, just such a huge believer in our team's really big believer in the live music experience and just providing more. I mean, imagine 5 years from now, you can just walk out your door and each week there's a really cool act that's going to be playing, you know, six blocks away. And the act itself is, you know, going to be a jazz trio that lives, you know, 3 blocks away. Or a folk singer-songwriter that lives in your building and you had no idea, or a hip hop artist that just totally blows you away that now you want to follow every show that they do through the city because it was so convenient to walk out the door and go down, you know, in your neighborhood to see an unknown act and what you just knew was going to be a cool space. And that's the thing that we try to hit on every time is
that's
going to
awesome.
Be a cool space.
Grindr or Uber, you know, for music or something like that. Like, you know,
I'm going to, from now on with press, I'm going to exclusively refer to this as the Grindr of music. For sure.
I think that would be brilliant.
Yeah, and then I'll need to spend the next 30 minutes explaining myself, but I will open it up with that. But yeah, I think that is the vision for this, and I think what is the mission for us is, and something that we say pretty often for the team is, we want to bring local music back. And I think if you think back, you have 10, 15, 20 years ago, you would go to that venue that you had no idea who was going to play. And you just knew they were going to curate a great act. But a lot of those 500 person, 1,000 person or less venues, especially outside of major cities, they've really gone by the wayside and shuttered their doors. And the music consumption, because you can so easily discover a band, much more easily discover a band from Iceland than from your own neighborhood. You know, the only tickets that you're buying and paying money for are the bands that you're listening to on Spotify or Apple Music that, you know, might be 5,000 miles away. And all of that consumption makes sense. But what if you had a really good way of discovering local live music right from your phone, where you just knew you could open it up and there'd be a show, you know, right down the street, and you knew it was going to be really high quality. I think it's one of the things that Airbnb as a whole does really, really well, is it builds trust for something that you've never seen before, you know, an apartment or a house that you've never been to, you've never seen before, and a city that you may have never been before. And you see 127 five-star reviews, and you know, okay, I can trust that this is going to be a good experience. And I think that actually translates really well to a concert experience, where you could have 127 five-star reviews, and it's, you know, it, the title's Lake House Jazz or the title is Afro House Brunch, and you're like, okay, that kind of sounds cool. I have no idea what that means. And you read the reviews, and you're like, well, shit, that seems really interesting. And and I think that's that can translate well to a lot of music experiences, and it doesn't really exist like that. But can establish the trust to where, all right, I'm willing to buy a ticket to this, just knowing the credibility of the space and the reviews, not knowing who I'm going to see. And then, oh my God, I can't tell you how many bands, artists that I've discovered through the platform that now I follow to other shows or listening to, you know, while I work. I mean, there's a local act out of LA called The Wave, The.Wave, that their concert hosts as well. Unbelievable energy to their shows and kind of like just talking about also these subtle things that end up being really powerful is they completely destroy a typical model of a concert. They have this thing called Afro House Brunch, and it is one of the best concerts I've ever been to in my life. And I'm not just saying that because it's an Airbnb concert, but it is truly just unlike anything I've ever seen. It's one part, it was in Inglewood, in a really interesting, cool space where you get out of the Uber and you're like, all right, where am I? Is this, am I in the right spot? And then you walk in and you're greeted by not only the host, but also just the smell of really good food. It's one part brunch. It's one part house party. It's one part hip hop concert. It's one part poetry, you know, slam poetry event. One part. It's actually totally ironically, an amazing Coldplay cover was actually done there. But everybody's up dancing, and it is just like, yeah, this breaks the mold of anything I've ever been to called a quote-unquote concert. And that, I think, is kind of – and then you just start following the music. I started following The Wave and listening to them almost on repeat for the next few weeks and evangelize like crazy. So maybe we'd get into creating a record label and the digital side of helping artists. But I think there are ways to discover the digital side. There's very few ways to discover the local artists or the live side of these shows. And so I think that's what we're pretty focused on right now. Another band I'm going to give a huge shout out to is a jazz band called John Brothers Piano Company. They have like, I don't know, 47 Instagram followers. And I don't know how many people listen to them on Spotify, but it's just the prototypical example of these insane musicians, so talented. And they busk around the streets in San Francisco and have for a few years. So they've been putting in the time. They're so good. And I just would have never had a chance to discover them before for an Airbnb concert. And now my wife and I follow them to their shows all around the Bay Area. I mean, we've driven an hour and a half to go see them.
That's awesome. So I don't want to take, I've already taken up a lot of your time and it's Friday. So you need to go and like enjoy the weekend. But just to wrap up, is there an actual app or is there an app in development for Airbnb concerts that people can download or?
It is the Airbnb app. So yeah, we launched it at the end of February, Airbnb Concerts. Okay. We've been building it and kind of incubating and refining it for well over a year before that, maybe a year and a half before that, and then launched at the end of February. And it is, it's just the Airbnb app. So airbnb.com/concerts, or if you go into the Airbnb app, you can click on experiences, and within experiences, you'll see concerts pretty prominently. But yeah, it's airbnb.com/concerts. And you can see, we're in about 25 cities and, everywhere from LA to San Francisco to New York to London to Paris to Tokyo, Sydney, all over the place. And you can check out our concerts there.
Okay. And what if you're an artist and you want to participate? How does that work?
Well, I think one of the best things that we've actually seen is artists that want to be hosts, that want to host the concerts themselves. And they can obviously play during the, you know, it can be a great exposure for them as artists to play during their concerts, or they can have their friends, their artist friends come and play and switch around each show. One of the best parts is the flexibility of whatever concept they want to bring to life. In a really unconventional, unique, kind of crazy, cool space. We'll help them with the spaces, and they can help create the type of music that should fill it. So they can go to airbnb.com/concerts, and within that, they'll be able to see an area to apply to become a host.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. And then last question, are you still doing music?
I am. Good. I am. But I'm too embarrassed about the quality and I especially with just life, as life would have it, I took off maybe about 6 or 7 years there where I didn't make any music, and I literally just got back into it in the last several months, and it is too bad to promote publicly, but my team has at least heard it, so I am slightly putting myself out there as the crazy dancer all alone again, but not quite ready. No, I'm not quite ready to dance alone at a music festival. But yeah, maybe one day I'll start publicly promoting it more.
Good. Well, I hope so, and I definitely want to hear it somehow, some way. I want to hear it. So, all right, James, you've been amazing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been so much fun chatting with you.
Yeah, same here.
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Thanks again to James for taking the time and talking to us about his career trajectory from all the way from South Africa to Silicon Valley and Airbnb, and how Airbnb concerts, this new division of music, can really be a whole new world for the artist and the fan, and having this incredible music experience. So again, you can just download the Airbnb app and just select experiences and then concerts, or you can just go to airbnb.com/concerts. So I hope that you will check that out. Thus ends another episode of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Maybe I'll do a jingle. Maybe not. I am your host, Elle Ariel. And again, we're at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobspodcast.com. We're also on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just go ahead and follow, and we'll try to follow back. And again, I am your host, Elle Ariel. You can check out my music and all my videos and other crazy stuff at lariel music.com. That's lariel music.com. I am also on the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram at Elle Ariel Music. So please follow me. And again, I will try to follow you back. So I hope everyone has a wonderful week. Take good care. Stay cool. And again, I want you to keep on hustling. Pursue that dream, and don't you give up.